My name is Daisha Clay. I'm the audio librarian here at Classical 91.7. While I'm a real librarian, I have a deep, dark
secret.
I know very little about classical music. I grew up listening to rock, and I know something about jazz. But when it comes to classical, but I really want to learn. So, every week on this show, a classical music expert will give me a piece of classical music they think I should know, and then we'll discuss it. Come learn with me in the classical classroom.
Hello, and welcome to the classical classroom.
Excuse me. Hi, welcome to the classical classroom. This is Daisha Clay, and here with me today in the studio is Jerry Ochoa, who is the violinist for a two-star symphony. I should say a violinist, right?
A violinist. There's more than one.
Two-star symphony, Houston's most unusual ensemble. In 2012, the Houston Press named Jerry one of their top 100 creatives in Houston. He's also a film producer. He's actually produced and directed a music video for Two Star that you should check out on their website. And his primarily creepy work has appeared on PBS and at festivals like South by Southwest and the New York Independent Film Festival. We have kidnapped Jerry from the second floor of our building today, where he is currently working as part of our on-air fundraising team. Jerry, air quotes, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the mini vacation.
So I think today we're going to be talking, because, you know, Halloween is coming up.
I've heard about that, yes.
Yeah, happens every year. It's weird. And we're going to be talking about creepy music. I think it would be great to start with Two Star, because I haven't listened to a lot of music that just scares the bejesus out of me, but I got to say... Two Star is pretty, it gets pretty macabre.
Thank you. That's a wonderful compliment from where I'm sitting. Two Star Symphony, we have always had a deep and abiding interest in the macabre, I guess, in the dark. But to us, it's always the dark and the playful. We try to find a balance with those, because to us, most of the things that people consider dark and spooky and Halloween themed, those are the things that we find fun. So... I did bring some songs from Two Star, some of our spookier material.
Yeah.
And if you'd like, we can go ahead and just jump right into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, well, we're going to start with I guess you could call it one of our classics, to the extent that we have classics. This is a song called Goblin Attack that we first composed almost 10 years ago. We wrote it for a ballet performance with the Dominic Walsh Dance Theater. Mm-hmm. We got to take it to New York and premiere it with the American Ballet Theater's studio crew, which was really cool. But it's a very spooky song. It's called Goblin Attack for a reason. We play it every Halloween. Uh-huh. And it's got an homage in it, actually, a musical homage to the horror movie Suspiria, which is one of our all-time favorites. It's something we bonded over early. So let's take a listen, if you'd like, to some Goblin Attack.
Yeah. Yeah, that's super creepy.
But thank you.
I'm always interested in kind of how music works. Like, I know when a piece makes me want to cry. I know when a piece makes me want to jump up and down. And you know, this piece is clearly sort of spooky, and it makes me feel funny inside. And but I don't know why. Do you know why?
Well, you know, I do think that one of the things that's really great and unique about non-vocal music, or at least non-verbal music, is that it has a universal understanding. You know, people from any kind of culture, from any era, really, can hear a song and feel the same sort of emotions. And I don't know exactly why that is. I do appreciate that it's got that sort of universal recognition. That particular song has a big influence from Bernard Herrmann, who we'll actually be listening to in a little bit. I brought some Bernard Herrmann with me, but he was Alfred Hitchcock's main film scorer and composer. And so that song, sort of the stabby rhythmic structure to it, was, I think you could say safely that that was influenced by Bernard Herrmann, who really is one of our favorites.
I like that it's stabby.
It is stabby. Stabby is a great description for quite a bit of the good scary music that's out there.
Yeah, it's very sharp, and there's this sort of lopsidedness.
Well, in the instrumentation there, our cellist and violist tend to create the structure and the bass line for our songs.
Okay.
In this song, what you hear is the cello coming in to establish the tone of the piece and sort of what the rhythm is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then the viola comes in on top of that. And then the part that I play as the lead violin is the kind of high-pitched, squealing, slidey thing that's happening all over, which is its own sort of melody, but it's just a real weird melody. And it started because I was trying to make creepy sounds using only one finger on the violin.
Really?
So I actually play the entire opening 2 minutes or so using one finger only.
Whoa.
And that high-pitched noise you're hearing is just me dragging it across the string and vibrating it like a madman.
It sounds like something falling. Like, it sounds like a person who's just sort of tumbling around.
I like that. Yeah, that's very
haunted
good.
House.
Haunted houses are a big influence for us. Disney's Haunted Mansion, specifically, actually.
Really?
Our cellist, Margaret, is obsessed with Disney's Haunted Mansion. Disney's Haunted Mansion and Dr. Dre are her two biggest influences. That's not a joke.
I can totally see that about
so her. A lot of our music is bass heavy and spooky from the low end, and that is because those are the two things that she dreams about.
I love it. Margaret's the coolest chick. So what else have you brought from Two Star for us today?
Well, I've got two more creepy Two Star songs for you.
All right.
Two Star does a lot of ballet work. It's something we've always loved doing. We love watching how dancers interpret our music. We've been fortunate to work repeatedly with several different artists in town, including the Dominic Walsh Dance Theater. What we're going to hear is a piece from our Titus Andronicus score. We did a full-length ballet score with Dominic a few years back, and this is from the very end of Titus Andronicus. Titus is known as Shakespeare's, by far, his most gruesome and sort of horrifying play, to the extent that there's still debate about whether he actually intended it to be a satire of violent plays of the time. Because it is so over the top. There's
really
cannibalism and sexual assault and mutilation and just
like
the most horrifying
Quentin
things.
Quentin Tarantino film.
It is like an early Quentin Tarantino film.
Yeah.
So what we're going to hear is a song that we wrote to take place to the final scene in which the mother of Tamara, the queen of the Goths, who has been one of the primary characters, sort of the antagonist, she is being fed a meal that is made up of her murdered and ground up sons. So she's actually eating her children, and she doesn't know it, and you know, it's that sort of a play. So what we're going to hear is a song called Feast. It's a little bit abstract. We wrote it to be disjarred and terrifying and not specifically melodic, but eerie and beautiful. When we recorded it, we actually recorded it in the pitch black, and we sat in the dark for about an hour doing take after take of it, and so that is what you will hear. This is Feast.
Yep, that's creepy.
Thank you, yeah. Written to creep people out. So.
Man, yeah, I can see how that just would perfectly fit with this kind of scene you're talking about. And how that, you know, Shakespeare is such a particular taste.
Oh, pun intended. I see what you did there.
And, you know, to pair Shakespeare with music like that, it just, God, it really illuminates what's going on in the text.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we it felt appropriate for the subject matter.
So what's your last two-star piece?
Well, the last two-star piece we're going to hear is also very creepy. This is a song. Now, the title of the song, we actually named it after a ballet dancer, well, a modern dancer, who performed to this piece once. We wrote a series of short songs where we were given video of the dancers dancing, each one doing a solo, but with no music. We couldn't hear what they were dancing to, so we were just given their movements, and then we wrote songs based on those movements. Now, most of the pieces came out, you know, some of them are kind of funky, some of them are kind of trilly and prim. This one, as soon as we watched the girl dancing to it, and she's one of our all-time favorite dancers, Dawn Dipple, and we were terrified of her dance. It was just the scariest. It was very, very deliberate. It moves very slowly. There's no sudden movements, except twice when one of her legs will start shaking uncontrollably, which is something we mimic in the song. But every other movement is very slow, it's very deliberate, and it's incredibly foreboding. To this day, we don't know what she was originally dancing to, but this is the song that we wrote to accompany her dance that just spooked the daylights out of us. So we call the song Dawn Dipple in honor of the girl who terrified us.
Oh, yeah. I hear the shaky leg.
You hear the shaky leg, yes. And I can tell you a little bit about the reason that I've noticed that a few of these songs I've brought have had something similar about them, which is that we do a really low-end cello part, and then the violin comes in with a very, very high-pitched, sort of weird wail-y sound.
Yeah.
And in this particular case, that was because our idea of what Dawn was dancing was that she was somebody who was some sort of a monster or a monstrous person that was deeply in control by sheer force of will. Uh-huh. She was controlling this body. But occasionally she would lose control, and that was the leg switching.
Yeah.
And the high-pitched screamy is because it's taking everything she has to appear serene and powerful and dark because she can barely control this thing.
Yeah.
So we wanted to... Primarily, it's a deep, dark, foreboding, deliberate piece, but there is an edge of panic all the way through that sort of builds and falls depending on what's happening to the body at any given point.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a little bit of detail about why it's structured the way it is.
Foreboding with just a side of panic.
Just a little sprinkling of panic on top.
I think your music makes me deeply uncomfortable and... Appropriately so.
Well, tis the season.
But, like, does it scare you?
No, honestly. We love the spooky stuff. I think a lot of the songs that I brought here today and that we're going to hear in general, just some of the classic Halloween tunes, we loved them because they scared us so badly as a kid, but not in an awful way, in a fascinating way. It was... You know, you take a song like Night on Bald Mountain, you know, Mussorgsky, or you take Dance Macabre, you know, take Camille Saint-Saëns, and, you know, they're terrifying pieces, but there is a sense of playfulness to them and almost delight or discovery, especially Dance Macabre, which was a huge influence on Two Star Symphony, just in general, the style of that piece, because it's so dark, and, I mean, everything about the piece is dark, but it is delightful. It's playful. There's skeleton sounds, but to me they sound like they're dancing. And then you go to a Night on Bald Mountain and, you know, I imagine witches and big demons and things, but they're not, I mean, they are terrifying, but it's an enjoyable feeling. It's a feeling that all of us in Two Star, I think, we grew up liking that chill yeah. that we get from a really good, scary yeah. piece of music. And so it's something that we try to create. It's something that comes to us.
I think a lot of people share that. I'm not one of those people. I'm a big freaking chicken. Like, I mean, I have actually gotten super freaked out at an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
They have some good chills in Buffy yeah. the Vampire Slayer. That's not to be taken lightly.
Yeah, it's there have been some terrifying episodes. I remember walking home from a friend's house after watching an episode one night and getting just completely spooked. And but yeah, like I've heard friends of mine talk about, you know, watching horror movies or doing scary things and it just being like this charge, you know, being like fun. And for me, I absorb it. It becomes like truly terrifying for me. I don't know. So I don't know what the difference between the two different kinds of people is. But so you mentioned Dance Macabre.
Yes.
We should hear some of that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's such a big influence.
Yeah,
on you
let's
guys.
Take a listen. Okay. I mean, it's Camille Saint-Saëns wrote it. It's late 19th century, and, you know, it's about death. It's about the Grim Reaper, I think, and he's got a cursed violin, and he makes the dead people rise up, and they start dancing, and it's the best thing ever. And you will hear skeletons dance in this piece, and it's just wonderful.
Jerry's doing the Thriller dance over there.
Oh, you told them.
What is it about strings that makes them sound so terrifying? It's I don't know what it is.
I think it's because they sound vaguely similar to the human voice, you know?
They
say the cello is the one that most closely mimics, I think, the human voice as far as the tonal range, but there is something to that, I think. I think you can make the sound of breathing, and you can make the sound of wailing, and you know, lower grunting guttural sounds. You can do all that with a string instrument. And
yeah, like when the brass came in, Dance Macabre. Mm-hmm. Like, it's nice, but it's not. It has a warmer feeling to it that doesn't strike that sort of visceral. I don't know.
Yeah, the string instruments, they have some kind of a really scary cheat code to your emotional core,
yeah.
I think. And
it's,
I can't explain it, but I do love to exploit it.
Yeah. So I think Night on Bald Mountain was the other piece you mentioned.
Oh, absolutely. Night on Bald Mountain is probably maybe the single most famous, you know, sort of Halloween piece that's out there.
Yeah.
It's Mussorgsky wrote it, and I think it's Fantasia, the animated film from Disney, that actually popularized it.
Yeah.
And there's a terrifying cartoon sequence to it, but it's just one of the most evocative. I mean, you see these mental images in your head, even if you've never seen the animation. When you hear Night on Bald Mountain, it is very clear that you're dealing with something scary, and there's a mountain and a village and something's flying, and it's just the most wonderful, terrifying piece. The image that you will always get if you've ever seen Fantasia is, you know, giant winged creatures that are just terrifying a mountain village during the night. Apparently, the song was actually written based on an old Russian legend that was about sort of the dark rituals that witches perform on a witch's Sabbath.
Yikes.
So what you're what you're hearing was originally intended to be a witch's Sabbath and the rituals that happen, and then it was sort of popularized as winged freaks terrorize Mountain Village by Walt Disney. That's right. Sweetheart Walt Disney.
That's the news story. Winged freaks terrorize village. Yeah, that is a truly terrifying piece, and it like creates such an atmosphere. I mean, you just automatically get a picture in your head of something happening, something nefarious and bad.
Absolutely, and you get that big thing where you have those big, warm, overwhelming blasts from the brass, and then you've got the skittery, high-end violin sounds that just... You get that full spectrum of sound, and it's also just a terrifying combination.
Yeah, and it's got such momentum, too. It's very energetic.
Oh yeah, there's no stopping that. Once you're on Bald Mountain, you just gotta wait it out. Yeah, it's gonna keep happening.
So what else you got for me?
Well, I did bring, it's a classic bit of music that, again, I mentioned earlier that Bernard Herrmann, Alfred Hitchcock's chief scoring composer, he was a big influence on Two Star Symphony, and he's done a lot just for Halloween in general, let's face it. A lot of his songs have ended up being in sort of the canon of what makes a spooky Halloween tune. Mm-hmm. So what I brought is the actual the Psycho Suite. This is the music that he wrote for Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho, which was 1960. It was black and white. This was very much sort of a transition piece because both the music and also the movie, because we really hadn't seen sort of openly depraved behavior and real twisted violence. We hadn't seen that on screen since before the Hays Code. So when Psycho came out and, you know, it was promoted as starring Janet Leigh, and then she is absolutely viciously slaughtered on screen midway through the movie, and that's set to one of the most sort of iconic scores ever written, it just blew audiences' minds. It was incredibly controversial, incredibly popular. It was dismissed as, you know, violent, lurid, exploitative trash at the time, and also hailed as a classic, which... It turned out to be, although that's not to say it isn't also violent and lurid, because it very much is. If you've ever sat through an Alfred Hitchcock movie, they get pretty twisted. So this is the Psycho Suite, and everyone will recognize it and hopefully be a little bit freaked out by it.
Yeah, that was terrifying. The
stabby psycho part.
Yeah, yeah. but it has that same sort of cadence, momentum, like this sense of something happening that the Mussorgsky had, like that same
sort of terrible, inexorable momentum. Yeah. The thing that is going to happen is already in motion. You know, there's no stopping whatever it is that's about to hit you.
Yeah, it's like a juggernaut of horribleness coming your way.
Well, that's a great description.
Which is different from the two-star pieces we were listening to that are sort of like you're just sort of enveloped in a doom that is already there.
We like to create the doom atmosphere. If that song Goblin Attack, the very first one I did, is actually a 15-minute piece.
Really?
And if you ever let that run all the way through, it does get to a section where the momentum builds in a way that's very similar, actually, to Psycho, but it is deep in a 15-minute piece. So.
Okay, so I think we have time for maybe one or two more pieces. What's next?
Next, if we have time for just a little more, I would love to get a little bit of Franz Liszt in there. Mm-hmm. I've always grown up, I've loved Franz Liszt. Liszt is one of those composers you can listen to and you just know, like, there was something interesting about this guy, because his music is very dramatic. It's romantic. It tends to get very big. It's virtuosic. Mm-hmm. Very, very difficult. Some of the most difficult pieces for the piano. And I read a little bit about Liszt growing up because I was curious because they are notorious pieces. And Liszt was a fascinating guy. He was sort of the first rock star. You know, Liszt was, he was huge, and he had these hands that were elongated unnaturally. And he had long, long hair, and he liked to throw it around. And his thing was that he would, you know, rip his gloves off and throw them into the audience during a performance.
No.
And he was, it was recorded, there were reports that women would pass out and they would faint and they would throw their underwear on stage while Liszt was performing. And he was a notorious lover. He had some very, very torrid, famous love affairs with people he probably shouldn't have. And a lot, I'm sure he should have. But anyway, so Liszt was a fascinating guy. He was always obsessed with death. A lot of his music deals with real dark themes. You know, sex and death were big. What we're going to hear is a piece called Totentanz. And this is a crazy piece. It also, later in his life, Liszt started writing some very, very modern music, you know, sort of atonal and weird rhythms and sort of haunting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This piece isn't exactly haunting, but it is very modern. It's an exciting piece. It's another piece that's incredibly difficult for the solo pianist in it. One of those pieces that not everybody can play, even professionals, because of what it requires your hands to be capable of.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to listen to some Totentanz. In fact, this piece is translated into the name Dance of the Dead. So this is very much in keeping with our Halloween theme.
Okay.
I get real excited talking about Liszt because he was a baller, you know.
Listomania.
Listomania. Yeah.
Was it actually called that at the time?
It might have been. I don't. I mean, he really, like, there's no overstating it. Like, he was a rock star. Like,
yeah.
Like, women went there to pass out and scream and try and hook up with him. Like, it was. That
it was
how Liszt rolled.
Yeah. So the instrumentation is really different with the piano, and then there's a lot of brass happening, much less stringy stuff going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of hits, you know?
Like
the brass and the piano trade hits a lot.
Yeah, and it kind of, the piano kind of lives at the in the lower register, sort of like that low rumbling.
You don't hear that very often, and it's such a cool technique. And it's, again, it's one of those things that I love about Liszt, especially his later era where he started just doing whatever was weird sounding.
Yeah. He's very cool. So what's our final piece?
Well, if we have time for just one last piece, I would love it if we could throw in a little bit of Bartók.
Okay.
Bartók is a really cool composer, and he's someone who you recognize his music, but I feel like maybe people don't really... He doesn't have quite the name level of name recognition that some of these other guys do, although you are familiar with his music.
Mm-hmm.
The piece we're going to hear, it's an adagio. It's music for strings, percussion, and celesta. It's referred to as his night music, and it's beautiful. It's very different. It's haunting. It's sort of fragile, you know, very delicate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a lot of the atmosphere that people just find eerie. It's wonderful. It's another piece that's influenced Two Star Symphony quite a bit. Stanley Kubrick, the filmmaker, actually used it for his movie The Shining, which has
really
been scaring the daylights out of people for years.
So
many people will probably recognize it from that if they've ever had the distinct terrifying pleasure of watching The Shining. But it's just a great piece, and he uses some unusual techniques with the instruments at hand to just create sort of an otherworldly, unsettling mood.
All right. What is that little dink in the background? What is
that little percussive tool that they're using?
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's terrifying.
It is.
It could be two soda bottles clinking together, right? But it's the scariest sound in the world.
Oh my god, there's such tension in this piece.
It's an incredibly suspenseful piece,
like,
right? It's
so what is going on?
It's not exactly melodic, you know? It's just atmosphere, yeah. And it's clearly uncomfortable, you know?
Yeah.
It's not a piece that you fall asleep listening to.
Uh-huh.
Listening to it again, it reminds me that Two Star Symphony was influenced by this, even with our piece Feast that we played a little bit earlier. Bears a little bit of structural similarity to this.
Yeah. Here, a little bit more. All right. Okay, well, I'm thoroughly scared now and freaked out and gonna have to go on with my day looking around corners and making sure all of the lights are on. So thanks, Jerry, I think.
You are so welcome. You're so welcome. I hope nothing is waiting for you in the dark shadows and corners of the studio.
Aw, thanks.
And thank you for having me. This has been great. Happy Halloween.
Hey, thanks. You too. Everybody, definitely go check out twostarsymphony.com to see what this amazing group is all about and to watch their video. So we'll be putting a complete playlist of what we featured in the show today up in the article on our website at houstonpublicmedia.org/classroom. And I'll also add a playlist of some tunes that we weren't able to fit into the show today there, so you can get just as freaked out as you want to this Halloween. For more Classical Classroom, go to houstonpublicmedia.org/classroom. You'll find scads of ways to connect with us and listen to us at that web address. Our most recent edition is Tune In, which is very cool, and you should check it out. There's a link there on the website. Make sure to rate, review, and follow us, whatever you do. You can always send me an email at dclay@houstonpublicmedia.org. Thanks today to audio producer Todd Terrifying Hulslander for making this show just a little spookier than usual. Thanks to program director St. John Flynn for his unending well of patience and charm. Thanks to Jerry Ochoa for scaring the crap out of us. Thanks to me for managing to say words in the face of my own fear. But mostly, thanks to you listeners for listening. We'll catch you next time.